enter this monument, the visitor would first pass through a narrow gate at the base of a huge granite wall, guarded by these enormous female colossi with their heads bowed in sorrow. And these colossi represented creation, courage, wisdom, and eternity. All these big themes are part of this story. You'd walk through this gate into a big courtyard and come across a great pool that was to be called the Pool, the Lake of Tears. Nearby, you'd see a granite slab, and on it lay a handsome dead youth, his face expressing, according to the artist, aloneness in the universe. And near him, a young girl, a statue, frozen in a scream, symbolically protesting the pervasiveness in the world of death. At the far end of this pool, where you would gradually walk toward, would be a large pyramid. And you'd go into the pyramid, and here you'd go down a set of dark stairs toward a doorway that you could see deep within this pyramid. And you'd enter this door, and as you opened it, you'd be surrounded by what the artist called uncommon light. This, he said, is the Chapel of Resurrection. And the walls are covered with beautiful, bright mosaics, and a very shiny stone floor reflects light that came into the room through what was called a special window projector at the top of this great pyramid. Overhead, as you looked up, you'd see an enormous golden cupola and a mosaic on it, which was called Praise of Eternity. And on the walls, according to the artist, written in fiery letters, are the words, "Your dead will come to life, their bodies will stand again." Finally, the visitor exits from this great monument, and the designer says he now feels at peace, his soul one with eternity and revealed goodness, literally given sight and wisdom. The second monument, designed for this massive campaign of monumental propaganda, expresses a somewhat different spirit, but no less characteristic of the sorts of utopian artistic visions that thrived during the Civil War. In 1919, an artist named Vladimir Tatlin was authorized to construct a massive building in the middle of Moscow to house the headquarters of the new Communist International, the center for the whole worldwide movement to build communism in the world to spread revolution, and it was to be called the Monument to the Third International. The building was enormous. It was to be several hundred feet taller than the Eiffel Tower, by which it was in fact partly inspired in its shape and design. Indeed, as this suggests, it was to be the tallest building on the face of the earth, an appropriate monument to the glory of socialism. Its shape is very interesting. It was a spiral iron framework, which supported the body of the building, and inside were a series of stacked rooms, made of glass, a cube with above it a cone, and on top of that a cylinder, all topped by a glass dome. You can see movement, just in my description, can be seen as being expressed in the design itself. Movement was also literal. This building did not just sit there. The entire inner body, these stacked glass rooms, were to revolve. And, for symbolic good measure, they were to revolve in harmony with the natural bodies of the universe. The revolution was nothing less than a cosmic event. The bottom cube would go on its axis very slowly and revolve once a year. The cone above it would evolve once a month, and the top cylinder would revolve once a day. And of course, this wasn't just a piece of art. This was a useful building. It provided meeting space, office space, a communication center. This was to be the physical center for the thousands of communists around the world. In addition to all this, there would be a huge open-air screen outside, the biggest a screen ever seen in the world, which would relay the latest news about the great progress of the world revolution. And in cloudy weather, they found an even better screen, and in fact in Moscow, the weather is often cloudy, they would project these images onto the clouds itself, and the whole city would be able to watch at one time. As all these stories and images may suggest, the Civil War era is essential for understanding this emerging communist order, at least at its first stages, and especially for understanding the complexity, indeed the continuing contradictions of power in Russia, in this case now Soviet power. On the one hand, You see authoritarianism and centralization, brutality, even bloody terror. Side by side with it existed these visions of a new and better world, visions of a transformed individual life as seen in efforts to emancipate women, visions of an almost religious transformation, a resurrecting the whole world out of suffering as seen in Chadar's monument, visions of modern power and vitality and movement as seen in Totland's great monument. One also can't forget that everyday life often remained outside of all these visions. For huge numbers of Russians, the Civil War meant neither utopian dreams nor, in fact, growing authoritarianism. It meant, above all, terrible persistent poverty, collapsed industry, growing famine, widespread drunkenness, and generally a difficulty of understanding all these new words that were coming from the new leaders. It also meant, though, for many Russians, hope that somehow a new and just and moral world was coming. Overcoming these problems, and indeed realizing these dreams, was the challenges Bolsheviks faced once they won the battles of the Civil War. And that's the subject of the next lecture.